It's my Christmas list.
My Christmas list!
I don't know how you say that. That's not a line of the song. You have to say that you want things, like a DVD.
Oh, right.
I'm specified.
And just one. Just any of them.
I want a DVD.
Big screen TV.
A big screen TV.
Standard def, please.
Big screen TV.
Give me that echo break.
480 pixels.
Everybody, welcome to the mini episode of Why We Watch This, the podcast where three friends make a themed cocktail, watch a bad movie, talk about what they like, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it. We're not doing that this week, but we will tell you what we are doing 2 weeks from now. For the moment, though, I am Brendan Drischler.
I'm Chris Ravel.
And I am Lee Delahanty.
Whoa. Thank you all for being here tonight, guys.
You know, you're welcome. I had to travel.
Well, I love you.
I'm glad you all came out of your rooms to join us.
Honestly, it's so easy when it's, like, just cold and dreary. And it's been very cold and dreary and gloomy for the last few days. It's been nice to be able to, like, I'm just going to hole up in my cave and never leave.
Well, speaking of other things that are gloomy, 2 weeks from now we're doing a rom-com, America's Sweethearts, directed by Joe Roth, starring Catherine Zeta-Jones, Julia Roberts, John Cusack, Billy Crystal, and a bunch of other people. The Tooch, Alan Arkin, Seth Green.
Hank Azaria.
Yeah, Hank Azaria.
His face, Dwight Schrute shows up for
him. Yeah, that's right, he shows up as an interviewer for like 5 seconds.
Eric Balfour is in it for like 2 seconds.
Yeah, there's a lot of people popping up in this picture. Almost makes you feel like it should be worth it.
Well, a lot of people turned up for the Brothers Grimm, too.
That is true.
Yeah.
Let it not be said that we can't still draw the stars when we want them.
Yeah.
So, garbage. It is on Netflix, so it's very easy to watch. It's not that long. So, I don't know. Give it a try. It's I don't know.
It's a lot and yet nothing at all.
Yeah. So, for America's Sweethearts, we have a drink called the Press Junket, which is one part gin, half a part of dry vermouth, half a part of sweet vermouth. Sweet vermouth, a splash of lemon juice, and some raspberries. You're going to put everything in a blender, puree it, strain it out, and serve it over ice. It's called a press junket, which I think I said.
Yes.
Okay.
It's fine. You should say it 5,000 more times. Yeah. It's like the goddamn
the junket.
Movie.
The junket.
I can't wait to drink the junket.
The junket goes well.
I hope the junket goes well, too.
I hope we all love the junket, and when we're drinking the junket, we all tell each other what we think of the junket.
No, do you think when we're at the junket, we'll get diamond earrings in our snacks?
Yeah.
What about perfume and diet
pills? How much money does the studio own?
I really, want to know how, is that ever a thing that we did?
We can't get into this now.
It was written by a 5-year-old.
Okay. It was written by Billy Crystal in part.
Yeah.
He was supposed to play the John Cusack character.
He was?
Yeah, because he wrote it, 20 years before they actually made it.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it was, he aged out.
Yeah, we'll get to it next
time.
But anyway.
It's weird how badly we want to talk about this movie, but I think it's
fresh in our minds.
Well, it's fresh in our minds, and I think the three of us hate it so much that this is going to be a real bloodbath, and I'm excited.
The Junket. Junket.
I'm legitimately excited to try it, and it sounds delicious.
Yeah, it does. So hopefully The Junket turns out as well as it does in America's Sweethearts. Which is spectacularly with no hitches.
None at all.
Did you mention Christopher Walken in the list of people?
No, I didn't mention Christopher Walken as a lunatic film director who bought the Unabomber's cabin, assembled it in his backyard, and edits movies in there.
And
this is satire,
and
guys.
And seems to share the same wig with Alan Arkin.
He does this, it's a very wiggy movie, too.
On many levels.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, because we've already tackled romantic comedies last year, we didn't really know what else to do. We had a list of topics that we were going to talk about at some point, and the topic we all hit upon as something we could discuss was the worst movies we ever saw in theaters. What does this have to do with America's Sweethearts? I don't know. They're both not very good movies.
I will actually tell you right now.
What?
It is because, at least for me, I really had to push through watching America's Sweethearts. And just as I had to push through the movie I'll talk about, which if I can just say,
yeah, just
start
right now.
You did have to push through. You were like literally like sat in a chair in a theater, if you're telling the truth.
Sure, but I mean I didn't stop. I didn't walk out and leave.
I mean, that idea is inconceivable.
That's my first question, actually. Has anyone ever walked out of a movie?
No.
You asked that before.
Did we? Okay.
But I don't remember anyone's, but, like, the idea that you would walk out of a movie is inconceivable.
It would take quite a lot for me to get to that point. It has not yet happened.
I think it would have to be very offensive to me on, like, many levels for me to just be, like, enough.
Yeah, I feel like I would have to be offended by, like, something in it, as opposed to just finding it terrible.
Or, like, if I was somehow, like, deeply triggered by something, but that doesn't really happen to me that much. But, I don't think I've ever walked out of a movie, but I'm just in terms of, like, a movie that I was like, God, this sucks. I was going to say The Wedding Date, and then I realized I had a much better, bad, terrible, worst movie. And, this will serve as a shout-out to Faith, because I saw it with her, I think, when we were both in, like, freshman or sophomore year of college. But we saw, Eragon. The really, really, really terrible fantasy adaptation of the shoddy
Christopher
novel.
The bad novel.
Book. Yeah, a shitty movie. Garbage in, garbage out.
So I never read the novel. I remember seeing an article.
I read the novel.
Was it bad?
Oh, it was awful. It was fucking god-awful. I remember, like, I got it for Christmas, I think, because it was, like, everyone was like, ooh, like, it's so cool, he's a 19-year-old, and he's published his own fantasy series. Like, not mentioning that, one, his parents published the fantasy series, and then it was picked up by a larger publishing company.
Who they did work for,
right?
Apparently.
And then, also, it's literally Star Wars by way of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Like, it is Star Wars with the trappings of a fantasy world. Anyway, I digress.
So, the defense I've heard of the defense I've heard of the movie, but also defending the book, was that, like, well, the movie sucked because it's based on a book that should have had more time to develop. And I don't know. If it follows the same basic plot, then there's just huge problems. Because it's very Star Wars-y. It's very much like... The kid with no parents is living with his uncle on a farm.
Right.
He goes away on some errand, comes back to see the farm has been, like,
burned down
by the evil overlord.
Yeah.
Uncle is dead. That's what kind of gets him into this. But aside...
And he also meets, like, a wizard who goes along with him on the quest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Played by Jeremy Irons, which...
Yes.
As in many terrible movies, he's kind of devouring the scenery and to great effect. He's a little more toned down in this one.
Mm.
But, the cast is bizarre. It's like Rachel Weisz voices the dragon.
I forgot she was in that.
Who's the guy that plays Rumpelstiltskin in Once Upon a Time?
Robert Carlyle.
Yeah,
Robert
yeah.
Carlyle's in this as the main bad guy's, like, second
you
command.
You have my
And I have to
I
tell
don't
you...
I remember him in that at all.
I have to tell you, he actually does... kind of amazing work.
Robert
Carlyle, I think, was the reason why I watched Once Upon a Time for as long as I did. Yeah, because, like, Robert Carlyle was always captivating and fun.
I don't think I've ever seen him give less than 5,000% to his roles.
Yeah.
And in this, he is...
He does one thing, and he does it so well.
He did a lot. He was one of the things, main things I remembered about the movie is that he just put on this, like, kind of amazing performance that I think stands out because everyone else just kind of sucks. But the most baffling of all was John Malkovich playing the evil overlord king, and it was only a few scenes.
Wasn't his name, like, Galvatorix or something like that?
Yes, like Galvatronix.
Yeah, it's a name that doesn't at all sound like a wizard name. Like,
no.
It sounds like a robot.
Or a spaceship, a sentient spaceship. But his performance was baffling. I actually kind of... It was similar to the problem that you have watching him in period movies, sort of, like, when he's a man in the Iron Mask, which isn't a great movie, but... He doesn't change anything about his performance. It's still John Malkovich, which is a very modern way of doing everything. So to see him in this, like, super medieval garb, waxing poetic about, my stone, I must have my stone, he's barely doing an accent, the whole thing is bizarre. But yeah, Robert Carlyle was great. It was led by Edward Spielers, this actor who kind of went nowhere afterwards.
He was on something.
The guy who played his... older cousin who walks out of the movie in, like, two scenes.
No, Edward Spielers was on Downton Abbey.
He was?
Yeah, he was one of the butlers for, like, two seasons.
I thought you meant the guy who played his cousin was on a show on NBC I watched called Kings.
Oh, I remember
And
Kings.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, I liked Kings. And Garrett Hedlund was...
He was in that, you're right.
As Han Solo.
Yeah, well, by way... It's sort of like Han Solo's son, the way they play it. But yeah, Dijon Hamsu is randomly in it. They, like...
Digital monsters.
They shoehorn in dwarves. There's elves, but they don't have pointed ears. The whole thing is just... It's garbage.
What's the fucking point?
Why did you go see it?
I think Faith and I had this thought of, like, this movie's gonna be garbage, maybe it'll be fun garbage. And it's not fun garbage, it is entertaining to make fun of, but on its own it's just bad.
See, I remember Meg bought it on DVD, and that's how I watched it, and I was just very, very bored the entire time.
So I also watched it with Meg much later in life, and what was a lot more entertaining was syncing that up with a riff.
Oh, yeah. I didn't do that. I just watched
it. That helps a lot. Because there's large parts of the movie that are just boring. Like, yeah. So yeah, Yeragon. That was my worst movie I saw in theaters.
Yeah.
Do you want to go or should I go?
I'll go. Right, I don't have a whole, like, big story, I guess. It was The Fountain. What's his face?
Aronofsky.
Yeah, that one. Darren fellow. I had never seen an Aronofsky film before. I never really thought I would like his films. And I, for some reason, thought I would like this one.
Were we in college?
Yes.
Were we in college?
Okay.
It was during summer vacation,
okay.
If that's the case.
It was either, like, before, like, the summer before college or the summer after freshman year, I think
I remember it coming out around my sophomore or junior year of college.
Was it that late?
I think it was.
Maybe it was.
The Fountain.
I might be wrong.
In any case.
Who'd you see it with?
The Brys.
Okay.
We all were interested in seeing it. I don't think any of us really had... I mean, I don't think... By the way, I don't think that we had any recourse to have known what the film was about. Because I think the marketing was very misleading and bad.
Why did you want to see it? I'm just curious.
Yeah, what was in the trailer that...
I was promised, or at least, like, led to believe that the film was a very different movie than what I got.
I remember seeing the trailer and thinking it was a romance across the times and ages.
And on paper, a romance across the times, or a story about, like, interconnected... like, love stories, was, like, yes. And,
yeah.
Like, it was all... the trailers also focused on, like, the devotion of that love.
There seemed to be a historical element that seemed kind of interesting.
Well, yeah, because it was basically, like, a past, present, future. There was, like, a conquistador. There was, like, the girl with cancer in the modern day terms of the doctor. And then there was, like, the spaceman. And, like, I had seen some sort of buzz or read some stuff about how, like, it was done very cheap and the effects were... Like, I've read about, like, how, the visual effects were done through, like... Very interesting. I mean, I frankly think the movie does look nice.
Yeah.
But, like, the spaceship and space scenes were all done through, like, I don't know, like, it's something to do with cellular level things. Like, everything kind of had this, like, looking through a microscope feel to it.
It did.
And
yeah.
That was, like, part of how they did the effects. I don't remember much about it because it was so long ago. It was 2006.
Did you?
Yeah,
okay.
During college.
Did you research how they made the tree come?
That's one thing I didn't show in the trailer, I'll tell you that.
Oh, Chris, when you stimulate a tree in just the right way.
So, yeah, I thought it was going to be that, and The Fountain is just a hot pile of garbage mess.
Mm-hmm.
Every character in the movie, like, you know, all iterations of the woman and the man, have, like, 20% of a personality put together, and it's just terrible. Like,
yeah.
They show you this trailer, and there's, like, they pump up, they put, like, inspirational music, and they're like, it's like, love, and do the time. And, like, all you get of the past is, like, the queen is just this sort of, like, mindless, like, oh, conquer things for me, and the conquistador is like, oh, so I will conquer things for you. And then he goes to, you know, America to look for the Fountain of Youth and kills a bunch of, you know, natives.
Right.
And then drinks tree...
Some.
Semen, yeah. It's a big old metaphor.
Well, I just don't understand why they had to make it look so much like jizz. Like, there was just no reason.
I mean, that was
because
it's a big old metaphor.
Yeah.
Big old metaphor. And then to the...
Wink,
so, yeah.
Wink, symbolism. Get it? Get it?
I couldn't fucking tell you what the tree... What the past has to do with the other storylines.
Yeah.
I could vaguely maybe tell you that, like, in the present-day storyline, there's a doctor who's working on, like, a cure for cancer.
Yes.
While his wife is dying of cancer.
Yes.
And he's sort of obsessed with, like, instead of spending
time
with his wife, he's, like, trying to find the cure. And then, like, surprise, his wife dies before he can find the cure. But then he does find the cure. And so there's, like, a... Don't you keep your mouth fucking shut. And then there's, like, the future plotline where the man is... It is the tree, I think, of life that, like, the conquistador found. And he's in a spaceship, and he's taking the spaceship with the tree in it to this, like, constellation where there's, like, a supernova or some sort of, like, cosmic thing that the wife in present day was talking about. And she's like, that's where I want to go when I die, or blah, blah, blah. Like, that's where we'll both go. Like, we'll find each other there. And he's like, you know, just basically like living off of the tree while taking it to them. And you're supposed to, I guess, put together that like this is theoretically the same couple or like the same two souls somehow. And the tree is somehow her. She's buried under the tree or something. But like, I mean, you can't fucking make sense of it. And like, I'm down for like an open interpretation thing, but like, the movie doesn't sell you emotionally on any of the storylines, and like, it's just terrible. And then he drinks semen. I can't stress enough how
upsetting it was to watch.
Upsetting and like stupid. It was the equivalent of like the green light in The Great Gatsby, since we were talking about that earlier. Like, it's just like, oh, I fucking
the most simplistic metaphor.
Yeah, it's the tree of life, guys. It comes.
Wasn't that the tagline for it?
It comes.
CUMS. Yes. I will say that a nice soundtrack by the guy that does soundtracks for Aronofsky films.
Right, who did like Lux Eterna.
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say was, I'm pretty sure I remember, I might be misremembering this, but I'm pretty sure in the middle couple, the doctor and dying wife,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure at one point someone says, like, what, you think you can conquer cancer? I think that's supposed to be like a zing line back to the conquistador thing.
Probably. The conquistador has like no, you get literally no emotion from him in terms of like, does he care about the queen or is he just doing, because I remember thinking that like he just seemed like a guy that likes killing natives.
Right.
And
well,
conquering shit.
Was there even much of a narrative there aside from go do that?
Not really. There's not a whole lot of dialogue in either the past or the future storylines. Much of the dialogue is in the present. The future has, like, literally next to none, because it's just this fucking guy meditating and floating in the air and doing Jedi shit in a bubble with a tree in it, and, like, looking at the stars and being like, oh, not there yet. And the past is, like, you know, a brief prologue of, like, go get this tree, yes, I will get this tree, and then it's just him silently, you know, like, watching his crewmates die and killing a bunch of dudes. Because, you know, they don't speak English, so there's, you can't really have, you know, witty repartee with each other. Souls as well.
Yeah, that too.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, it's, it was not good. I'm surprised, now that I think about it, that I saw it with the prize, because, like, I don't know what would have intrigued them about
it. I'm a little surprised, like, not to belittle them in any way, but it just doesn't feel like...
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like the sort of thing that I would have expected them to, like, see a trailer for and be like, oh, yeah, this...
They might not... I don't know. I mean, I can't remember. And maybe I'm overestimating my influence with them, but, like, it's possible that I was expressing an interest in this
uh-huh.
movie, and they didn't... Maybe they were like...
Sure, we'll go see
yeah,
this movie.
Yeah, that sounds cool. But they might have been... Maybe they like Requiem for a Dream, and they wanted
yeah.
to see this one. I don't know.
Did you all leave the theater feeling similarly?
Yeah, we all walked out like, what the fuck was that? Like, it's terrible. Like, yeah, we were laughing on the way home. Like, I mean, I wasn't, like, I wasn't bitter or upset about it. I was just, like...
Bemused.
Shaking my
yeah.
head. S-M-D-H.
Smidda.
Smidda.
Smidda. That was my experience.
All right. So I had a couple things that I wrote down because I was thinking in a couple different directions. I'll just go through a few of them real quick. I've fallen asleep twice in a movie theater. Like, once I did because it was, not counting these times, because it was a midnight showing and I was like 2 in the morning and I was tired as fuck. So I fell asleep briefly during Attack of the Clones. the other two times were during the day were King Kong, the Peter Jackson King Kong,
mm-hmm.
and Lee, when you and I, and I think the Bryce too, and maybe some
Jurassic
people
World?
Saw... No, I didn't see that with you guys. We saw The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. I fell asleep toward the end, and I just woke up, and there was, like, this gooey, honey-esque gold, like,
mm-hmm.
melting everywhere, and I was just like, what the fuck? How did we get to this point? Like, how has it come to this?
That...
Has it come?
I also...
At long last.
I watched that movie, not in the theaters, but... It is like a 45-minute sequence.
Oh, yeah.
Smaug. It is so much.
So you were awake for, like, Hobbit Dwarf Mario.
Yeah. All that, yeah, with the barrels?
Yeah. The,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That was fine. I was sold.
Where, like, the Green Hill Zone song plays while they...
Yeah. Peter Jackson could learn a thing or two from that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
The other... just as a weird sort of example, because I don't know if anyone else has an experience like this also, but... I think the one time that I remember where the entire time throughout the movie I was so preoccupied with why I wasn't liking this was when I watched La La Land, which we've also talked about many times before.
Yeah.
But I feel like I wasn't even able to focus on the movie because I kept sitting there thinking, like, people love this movie. What am I missing here?
Right.
And so the entire time, like, I couldn't even focus 100% because I was just like, there's something that I'm just not getting here. It was even the second time we watched it was the time where I really had to go through and be like, okay, like, this just doesn't work for me in any way, shape, or form, but I can actually watch the plot now. Because the first time I was just like, am I missing something here? Like, is there...
It turned out, no.
Yeah, no, I was not missing something. And so the two worst experiences, the runner-up is Star Wars The Clone Wars, the animated movie, which I saw in theaters with my boyfriend at the time, and he wanted to see Sex and the City, the movie.
Oh, God.
And I wanted to see Star Wars The Clone Wars, and so we agreed that we would both see the movies, like, both of them with each other. I don't know who had the worst end of that bargain. I think I probably still did with Star Wars The Clone Wars, because Sex and the City, at worst, it's the TV show, but, like, 3 hours long. So,
yeah.
Like, if you like the TV show, you'll probably like the movie.
Doesn't that mean your boyfriend at the time had the worst end of the bargain? Because,
well, I thought
either of you.
Yeah. No, it's true, but I felt worse because I was like, I can't believe, like, I dragged someone to this movie.
Right. Well, because it's sort of, it's, if you guys are both going these two different directions, you're like, well, my thing was shit.
Right. It's like, I feel obligated to make sure you're watching something okay or enjoyable. And I felt embarrassed that we had, like,
because you probably, like, stumped for it. Like,
yeah. Well, that movie made me not watch the Clone Wars series, which turned out to be pretty good.
It is pretty good.
Yeah.
It starts to peter off at the end.
It does, and I think it also takes a little bit of time to get into it, as, you know, like any TV series does. But, like, I found the character of Ahsoka so unlikable, and she kept calling R2 R2, and I was like, you don't need to give him a nickname. You don't have to. He has one. His nickname's R2. But just, like, it was clearly designed for, like, an 8-year-old market. Maybe, again, also, it's one of those things that plays better on TV. Like, a TV series plays differently than a movie does, just because of the medium, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, We're blurring the lines now with the golden age of television again, and, you know,
are we just?
Yes, and, like, yeah, and your Game of Thrones and Siders and Game of Thrones. But it really did feel like I was just watching, like, a child's program for an hour and a half on, which I effectively was, because I found out, like, after the fact, it was just several episodes of the TV show that they had done
stitched together,
and then they wanted to stitch together and make a movie. Lee probably remembers my least favorite experience, and not, to be fair, probably not the worst movie I've seen, but was when we saw Man of Steel, which I just did not care for. And so it was the closest I feel like I had ever come to walking out of a movie. I did not, because, one, I just don't, and two, I was with you and, like, the Brys probably again.
Probably.
Yeah. And so, like, I wasn't going to be like, later, guys, I'm going to go sit in the lobby for an hour and a half while you guys finish the movie. But, like, it just, to me, I'm not a huge Superman fan. Like, Lee, you like Superman more than I do.
Yeah, I still like, by the way, I still like a lot of things about Man of Steel.
And there are things that are...
I'm not ashamed to admit that.
There are things that work in Man of Steel, I will say.
Yeah, there are.
But there are other things that do not work. Like, the weird deconstruction of a character who has never been presented before. Like, this is the first time in this movie that we have seen the character of Clark Kent or Superman. It's like you've had three previous movies.
Right.
I mean, you've had the Christopher Reeve one, but they're a different continuity, so you can't look at them
so
and be like...
Seriously, like, he's this version, this take.
Right, what I'm saying is he immediately starts to deconstruct, like, who Superman is without showing you who he is, because there's the whole thing about Jonathan Kent being like, well, maybe you should let those kids die if it comes down to it. And it's just like, and that's also, I can accept maybe him saying, I'm afraid of what will happen to you if people know you have powers. There might be times where you have to make a hard decision and not save children.
Which,
if it
by
means...
the way, is a really interesting lesson.
Right, but his lesson is basically just, no, don't rescue me from the hurricane. I'm going to die now. You fucking stay put. And also, I mean, the Zod thing we could go on about too, but it was mostly just it seemed like such a strange reading of who Superman was as a character. And again, this is coming from someone who does not care about him as much as other people do, but I feel like I still sort of know what I would want from a Superman character. I think the Christopher Reeves movies do it pretty well. And even to a point, I think Superman Returns does it pretty well. Like, I mean, it's kind of, Superman Returns also has issues. Mostly, I think Kate Bosworth is my biggest problem with that movie. Because
she's
boring.
No point now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do too, honestly.
I mean, we can talk... I mean, Kevin Spacey, problematic, but great in that movie.
No, I know. And again, Kevin Spacey, again, problematic.
How about
a lot of
Cozy?
Yeah,
Parker
Cozy is so great.
Kitty is amazing in that movie.
There's
a lot of delight
in that movie, I think. I think it's a little long, and like I said, Kate Bosworth, but like...
And super good.
And super baby, yeah. Poor James Marsden playing James Marsden part, as always. But I enjoyed that a lot more than I enjoyed Man of Steel.
Two things about Man of Steel, just off the top of my head that I remember, because I'm on the same, like, I saw that movie with my parents, and they're like, oh, there are things here I like, and other bits, whatever, but two things that always stuck out in my head is the sheer level of untold destruction that they wreak upon Metropolis. It's gratuitous at a certain level, But then also, and this is so minor and also very childish, but the rockets they send Zod and his generals up in are literally dildos.
Yeah.
Like, it's really stupid.
Well, the one thing I always still remember to this day is when Amy Adams is in the Arctic.
Get to piddle. What if I have to
tinkle? Yeah. Jesus Christ, Amy Adams. I hope you got paid well.
She must have felt her soul die a little bit when she had to deliver that line. And Zack Snyder's like, no, honey, just trust me.
Tits out and say the line.
Yeah.
But that was, yeah, then we saw This Is the End afterward the same day. Like, we went to find hamburgers and came back.
That's an interesting double feature.
And I was much happier with This Is the End.
Yeah
I mean, This Is the End is not trying to be anything other than what it is.
I find This Is the End a little depressing.
It is, because, you know, it's like an apocalyptic comedy pretty much. So, you know, your mileage may vary on how much you can watch an apocalyptic movie at all.
Yeah, I will say, I don't know if this is an actually, or if this is a hot take or not. I don't care what it is, really, but, like, I really liked Hans Zimmer's take on the Superman theme. Like, I liked, if you were not going to use the John Williams theme, I actually really like Hans Zimmer's version.
I don't remember it, honestly.
It's nice. It's really
good. I'd have to hear it again, because I really don't remember it at all.
I think that Man of Steel could have been really cool and really great, but I always come at Superman from, like, a very theoretical perspective of, like, I don't really care about the comics. I've never read a Superman comic. That's a lie. I read Superman Meets Shazam. That's a good comic, by the way. It's a good little story. But I've really never read a comic of Superman in my life. And I really like Superman a lot, but only because of, like, I latch onto certain things about him. Like, I like the certain... I like the, like, alien aspect of him.
The outsider.
And, the fact that he, like, you know, is altruistic and does all these things, but despite not being, like, you know, technically a member of humanity... and I find that, like, I find him as a character to be fascinating, and so, like, I was ready for this movie to do, like, a very different take on that character. And I think it could have succeeded in that, and I agree that there are problems with it, but I think Superman Returns and Man of Steel are, like, to me, closer to what I want out of the character Superman than the Christopher Reeves movies.
Well, I mean, the Christopher Reeves movies are very much of their time, right?
Yeah, they're like, very, like, simplistic, like, he is what he is.
Yeah.
Lois and Clark, still my favorite Superman.
I love Lois and Clark.
Lois and Clark is a fine television program.
It really is.
Love Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
And also a very much a product of its time.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, you take what you, it's also very a product of its TV time.
Yes,
that's
very much so.
It's that H.G. Wells episode.
Of this time. But it's of this time in which it was, who are the actors in that one?
Dean Cain.
Dean Cain.
Well,
because Terry Hatcher kept working after that, but Dean Cain kind of
went nuts.
Yep.
Yeah. And now appears in, like, Hallmark
religious,
channel movies.
Well, no, and, like, religious, like, tinted movies.
Yeah.
But I had another question I wanted to pose to you guys that I thought of when I was going through this. Is there an experience you had at a movie that was a bad experience solely because of, like, the environment of the theater rather than the movie itself?
Not really.
Good question.
I'm pretty, like, easygoing.
I think same. I saw Juno in, like, the second row.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, like, not great, but it didn't
happen. Sorry, I forgot about this, that he did this. For one of my birthdays, when you were still, like, you planned birthdays with your friends, in that sort of childhood sense,
mm-hmm.
it was, like, a latter one of those type of birthdays, like,
mm-hmm.
one of the last few of those. And I decided that I was going to make all my friends come with me to see one of the Bourne movies. It may have been the first one, may have been the second one, but, like, at the time, like, I had read, like, probably 3 or 4 years before the first Bourne movie came out,
mm-hmm.
I read all the books, and I was obsessed with the books, because that was my amnesia phase, right? This is, like, not a joke.
You're really into amnesia.
Yeah, I used to go on Amazon, because Amazon was, like, primarily for books then, and there was, like, you could look up books by plot keyword, and I would type in amnesia and sift through, like, thousands of entries.
Wow.
And find books with, like, amnesia characters, because I was really into that trope for a hot second. By a hot second, I mean,
like,
a couple years.
So is that how you got into Bourne?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was either the Gateway or
your Gateway.
I heard about it. My parents happened to own them and they had read them at some point. And I love the books. And so I was, like, super excited when they were going to make movies. And I was frankly a little bummed that Matt Damon was going to play him because he didn't look like Jason Bourne to me in any sense. And he still doesn't. The Bourne movies are okay. I sort of, like, tired of them after a while.
Did you ever see Jason Bourne? Like,
no,
the most recent one?
I never did.
Okay.
I hear it's a retread of the other ones, though.
It's very different, and it had to be because, like, obviously the Bourne movie, the books are from a very different era of espionage. And, like, you know, I take many. Some of them were well-made movies, I have to admit, but I did, like, make all my friends who may not have given a shit about Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
Like, we're all gonna go see this movie. And he got there, like, very late and had to sit in the front row to the side. And, like, those movies are really heavy on Shane
McMahon.
Right,
yeah.
And it was, like, not the way to watch that movie.
Oh, you can imagine.
It was bad. Yeah, I actually prefer, to some extent, the awful 1980s TV version of the Bourne identity with
Richard
Chamberlain.
Yeah.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I think it's truer to the book.
No, I didn't know the series.
I mean,
existed.
It probably is.
It is, yeah. It's longer and therefore can do more of the story, and it's closer to the original, like, plotline of the story, where, like, there's an assassin named Carlos. And that's why Jason Bourne goes undercover to kill Carlos, but then he thinks he is Carlos, because he has to go undercover as a rival assassin, and so he discovers his cover identity before he discovers his actual identity. Jason Bourne is like the identity of like an assassin that he created to catch like the other assassin.
Oh, I see.
His real name is like David Webb.
That's kind of more interesting.
So, yeah, spoilers for because in the new movies, it just looks like it's generic spy bullshit,
I think,
right?
So,
well,
like,
he's wiped from the records.
They imply that he's like.
Jason Bourne's like a code name.
I think, but it's also that he's like of this almost like supernaturally talented class.
No, that's you're thinking of the Bourne Legacy where they actually are super soldiers.
Oh, you're right, I am.
By the way.
Which I hated.
I love Bourne Legacy.
I hated Bourne Legacy. It's so boring.
It's so
I don't
bad.
Understand why they even
it.
Called it a Bourne movie. It has nothing to do with them.
I asked also because Rich is a fan of the Jason Bourne movies, and he saw Jason Bourne, and he did not like it. So I was just curious if you had.
Oh, really?
Do they bring?
I never saw it. I know that like they bring back that girl who dies.
Yeah,
what's her face?
Julia Stiles.
Yeah, and also spoiler alert: she's killed after like 5 minutes or
really?
Something.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I know.
Poor girl.
She has like 15
think,
minutes on
you
screen.
Think it's like finally gonna be her day.
Yeah, yeah, and then she dies.
That
yeah.
sucks.
It's so weird. Like
I feel bad
it's
for
so
her.
Weird. She's the one other character that's in all the movies.
Yeah,
and then they bring her back, and then
they just off her again. Yeah,
shove her in a fridge.
Yep, fridger.
Fridger.
The one I had were you going to say something?
No.
Okay. Whenever I saw Les Miserables in theater, there was a girl behind us who would not stop singing along to the movie.
Ugh.
And it was still
yeah,
only
you.
The second most excruciating part of seeing that movie in theaters.
Yeah.
But
Was the most Russell Crowe?
It was that, and also just the fact that I think Les Miserables is like a 3-hour assake of a movie. Like, it should not be this long, and you should not repeat all these melodies for no good reason, but like, by gosh.
Is
God,
it longer than
to...
the show?
No, it's shorter than the show, but I mean, the movie is like 2.5 hours. The show is a little bit longer than that.
Do you find the show interminable?
I do.
There you go.
I wanted to see
why
because,
you see the movie?
Because
the
I always
musicals?
See I see almost any musical.
Yeah.
Did you like just because I will?
Did you see The Greatest Showman yet?
No, I don't know if I'll be seeing that one.
It does
that
not.
That might be a bridge
the
too far.
The bar stops there.
Yeah.
It honestly does not look good.
It does. I've not heard great things about it. The couple of people who I know who have enjoyed it are not always people whose opinions I trust in these matters.
I don't know why people like this so much.
I think it's just one of those classics. I think it's kind of revered as this thing. I don't know.
It's just. I mean, I think part of it is like. I think the character of Eponine as, like, a weepy teen appeals so much to, like, girls of a certain age group. Like, I, too, am in love with a boy who doesn't notice me at all. I'm just like Eponine, who dies horribly.
I think it's sort of another play on... It's not the same themes, but I feel like Phantom also kind of gets at a similar audience.
I mean, it's a lot of, like, overwrought, like, high-emotion crap. So, like, if you're like, I want to feel so sad and move, you could watch this and be like, oh, everyone's so sad
well,
and
it would be like,
well, my favorite part of Les Mis are, like, the revolutionary songs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't give a shit about the weepy love songs
yeah.
or, like, I actually really like that you hear people sing. Like, that's the one
it's
thing I like.
It's the song of angry men.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
the song of a people.
That's what I relate to.
Almost
it. I don't remember it.
My favorite part of Les Miserables is from the book, which I remember reading, is there's a scene where Jean Valjean, like, is walking down the street toward the beginning, and there's a little French kid named Petit Gervais. Which I just love his name, Petit Gervais. And he's, like, carrying a sou with him, and he drops it on the ground, and Jean Valjean steps on it. And the book is unclear as to whether or not Jean Valjean realized that he's standing on it, or he doesn't, because the kid's like, sir, you're stepping on my sou! And Jean Valjean's like, what? What am I doing? What sou? And you, like, can't tell if he's being a dick, or if he legitimately doesn't know. And, like, this little French kid is just standing there crying about his suit, and I just thought it was like the funniest fucking imagery in my head
did you
of this child Petit Gervais.
Did you imagine him as a tiny Ricky Gervais?
Pretty much.
Oh man.
You have the laugh, Jean Valjean.
Have a laugh at my suit.
Go on then. God. I mean, I think YMMV, like, the Miz is like a... I know it's like a classic or whatever, but it's like an okay story.
Are we talking about, like, the book? The book is, like, it's so... long, and it's so dense.
Is it one of those paid-by-word things? Is that why it's
I believe it was...
Because, like, there are chapters where, like, Victor Hugo is, like, goes off on digressions about slang, where he talks about, like, how much he hates people using slang.
Well, then there's the sewer chapters.
Yeah.
Like, you could, like, I was literally told to skip them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, when I read in high school, too, they were like, yeah, go miss this part, skip this part. He's gonna talk about history for, like, 3 chapters here, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the thing I think writers did during that era. I mean,
there's a lot of, like, serial... publishing.
Yes, but I mean, but there's like in other books, like in War and Peace and stuff like that, they go on huge digressions of like, and this is what the farmer's life is like. I'm sorry, they do that in Anna Karenina where it's like, do you want 5 chapters about the countryside now? Like, no, this has nothing to do with the fucking plot.
This isn't necessarily a pay-by-word thing, but when I first wrote A Study in Scarlet, which is the first Sherlock Holmes novel, I literally thought that there was a misprint in the book that 2 halves of different books had got bound together because I was like reading a novel set in Victorian London and then like halfway through like the chapter ends and then the next chapter for like 3 or 4 chapters is suddenly about Mormons in Utah.
Yes.
And you're like, I was like, what happened to, and there's no like indication that like why we're going to Utah. And it comes back later, but like at the time I was like, what the fuck? Who are these people? They're none of the, you didn't recognize any of the names, like they don't mention who they were before that point, but like then you come back around to like, it turns out the murderer was these Mormons. Turns out, like, I had to get through those chapters.
And wasn't
it
like baffled. Wasn't it like, it was like, because I think I read that one too, but because wasn't like the Mormon society like really abusive and it was sort of like a crime syndicate almost?
No, it was something to do with like the person who it's been so long, but I think the person who'd done the crime was like a former, he was taken in by the Mormons.
Oh.
And they were, at first they were really nice, but then some shit went down and he had to run away. I think that was what went down.
Okay.
But I remember him being a sort of like refugee of some sort, where like he was taken in with his daughter, I think, and then something happened to his daughter and like made him, you know, it's very foggy, but I don't think it was about the Mormons being a crime syndicate. I think it was more like
there
was a personal crisis. Well, there's one about my favorite Sherlock Holmes story is the Red-Headed League.
Yeah.
The guy's like paid to like copy shit down in a Bible and
in a room.
And Sherlock Holmes is like, you didn't think I was fucking weird? And like, are you a fucking idiot? And it turns out he was being paid to do that so that his employee could rob him blind because he wasn't at his store. It's like the dumbest story.
Well, you really have to have someone holding on tight to that idiot ball to make that work. Like,
yeah. So, well, they're paid. The thing is, too, they actually paid him.
Yeah.
Like,
because it wasn't the logic, like, we're stealing from him anyway, so we might as well throw him a couple.
Throw him a tenner.
Yeah.
Well, like, surely he would have made it. Unless they're paying him, like, all the money that he would have made at the store, wouldn't he be like, why am I doing this for less money? They joined the club so he could copy down words in a book.
Yeah, on the pretense
of red-haired people.
Yeah.
Does none of this sound fishy?
It's a nice one, Chris.
I want them to do that on
guys,
I have a little job for you.
Guys, no, I guys, I have something to tell you. I know I've been saying I've been teaching ESL twice a week, but they've really just been sticking me in a room where I just copy out of the dictionary.
Oh, man. Lost that laptop. There should really be, like, a modern-day adaptation of this that's not done by Stephen Moffat, where the...
Didn't he do an adaptation of
it? He didn't do that story, but all of his stories are atrocious, so...
No, they're terrible.
But I feel like the modern-day version of that is naturally, like, some dumb phishing scam that someone falls for.
Yeah. Or, like, a catfish kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, we got anything else to say about my experience in theaters?
No, it was slightly longer conversation than we thought it was.
No, but
yeah, it was.
We had fun digressions.
Yeah.
I will say, this is, not, like, a small anecdote of not a bad experience, but, like, I went to see Collateral with Meg on a sort of semi.
Which one's Collateral?
With Tom Cruise as an assassin and Jamie Foxx.
Yes. Okay.
Of like maybe this could be, this sounds like it might be good.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really know a whole lot about it, and it could have been terrible, and it fucking paid off. So
Collateral's
such a good movie.
Yeah.
I love the music, and Meg and I like it was a fun shared movie experience for the both of us.
Yeah. Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's a good way to go out on.
Yeah.
A nice experience.
I'm hopeful.
Yeah, yeah. That maybe the next time we see a movie without knowing anything about it, it'll end up being another Collateral.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all for this episode. We will see you guys in 2 weeks with America's Sweethearts and some alcohol and some other crap to go along with it. So everybody tuck in for that crap.
Yep.
All right. We'll see you all then.
Bye.